What you're about to listen to was originally broadcast on 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia. For details, go to the website 98five.com.
It is a pleasure to have your company this morning. Lockie hanging out in the studio, pressing the buttons and playing the tunes and talking to some wonderful people, including Craig Hunter, Assistant Principal from Ereboth Christian College in Wilson. Good morning, Craig. How are you going?
Hey, Lockie, good to hear your voice.
And likewise, always a pleasure to chat to you. And, you know, I just had a bit of a brain fade, actually. I was talking off-air to you about locations, and I've gone, hang on, you're in Wilson. You're not up north at all. So forgive me for going down that road. I don't know how I got those two mixed up. But, look, we're talking education, and it's something that is a very broad spectrum. And I mentioned to you off-air, you know, for me, I've got kids that are older who have done the school thing, and I've got one who is still in, you know, just the latter stages of primary school. So this stuff is really relevant for me, but I've also got some experience, which was a bit old, so it's nice to have your really fresh perspective on it all. Personally, I guess it's just a personal question, do you find that, you know, education over the course of even 2 or 3 years can change dramatically?
Oh yeah, I mean, when I think about teaching for 30 years, how I teach now is very different to how I taught back then, and I think the big difference is more student-centered learning.
Yeah.
Than teacher-centered, you know, where we sat at the front and taught two kids.
Yes.
I think the other thing is the use of technology as a tool
and
a scaffold. And so they're the two massive changes, as well as lots of smaller things as well.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, during the last couple of weeks in my regular real estate show and gardening, we've talked about technology in a really significant way and the impact that it's had on business and on relationships and everything. It's huge, but education is one of those spheres that it's probably a lot deeper than we even know. And there's still so much more to come, isn't there? But hey, we are talking about different things across the spectrum of education. Now, I was considering what's been happening the last few weeks. I know there's been NAPLAN around, and that, you know, brings a whole bunch of different dimensions to the education sphere. One of the things that I ask about, you know, some of the structured learning that we've done over the years, things like timetables, are they still relevant? Should we still be learning those things?
I think it's one of those debates, isn't it? And I think as we move away to more of a, you know, inquiry-based learning and let's make learning fun, the idea of sitting there and rote learning at times tables doesn't seem to fit in with that kind of narrative. But all the research says that learning and memorizing times tables by the time kids are 9 years old is essential.
Yeah.
It's essential because it's setting them up for a whole lot of other learning in math and life and certainly high school. And so it's definitely something that hasn't gone out of fashion. I think how we do it's changing,
yes.
But the end result is we need to teach our kids times tables at home and at school.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that we're going through at the moment with our nearly 9-year-old. But for me, every time I bring those to the table, I guess recollect my education and how times table have been so crucial to my, you know, journey of life, basically. It's something that you use literally every day in some way, shape, or form, so very important indeed. And are there...
I was going to say, and I think that We'll talk in a minute about some of the ways we can do it in a more creative way, but certainly the old-fashioned things in the back of the toilet door, the side of the bed, using songs, using flashcards, they never go out of fashion. And I think there's something about, as a parent, helping your kids, not just saying, oh, here's a computer program, that's great, but there's something about that human interaction as a parent of helping on that journey and seeing that as a great opportunity to teach your kids those things.
Yeah. Now, what's the deal with the NAPLAN, actually? It's been extended or something to that effect? What's actually happening there?
Yeah, so what's happened is, and I guess this links to times tables because we're trying to measure data on where kids are at. And what's happened with COVID is that schools have been hit by, you know, kids in isolation, kids being out. So some of the kids in our school, for example, have been sick for a few days and then they've tested positive and then they're out for a week. So because the NAPLAN window is only 2 weeks online, and then obviously year threes do a writing one, it means that we have had some kids missed out, or we've done some days have come back literally still recovering, and it's like, right, bang, you've got to do these tests. And so even today we've been ministering 2 tests to some of the kids. So what the WA government, not all states have done this, but they're extending it for a week
right.
So that kids can try and catch up NAPLAN. And remember that for year fives, they didn't do it in grade three because of COVID.
Yeah, okay.
So for the grade five kids and the threes, this is the first time they've both done it. So it is important. That data does help. I talked last time about perhaps the pressure not helpful on kids and parents and schools putting unnecessary pressure, but certainly the data that we get from it helps us hopefully help the kids and as schools with funding and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it is good. It's another week. And I think some schools are very grateful for the extra time to do those tests.
Yeah, for sure. Now, some survey results regarding times tables. You want to just touch on that quickly?
Yeah, I think that as we're time poor, I think a lot of parents find that doing times tables, you know, is it really important? Is it necessary? But most parents, and certainly most educators, surveys have shown that it's still essential and it's still important. So certainly our surveys show that, yep, time tables is important and we want to invest in that. And it's not something we want to throw away. And one of the interesting things, a bit of a side note, is that we'll talk about this a bit later as well. I want to unpack this a bit. But with the PISA rankings, certainly Australia is dropping down. And with the new curriculum coming in Australia, some of the arguments was, oh, look, maybe we should push back times tables to start at year two or even year three.
Yeah, yeah.
And the maths teacher's saying, no, we need to start earlier. We need to get them into numbers and skip counting as soon as we can. So certainly the research and all the surveys say, look, start as soon as we can and increase the rigour, and this is an essential building block for maths and for learning.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the best ways for me personally, get a whole bunch of kids in a room, give them like three or four bags of lollies and get them to share the lollies and get them to learn their multiplications by that. Once a week, they'll have it down in no time at all. Now, one of
Do you ever play Bang Bang? That's a good one always, cops and robbers and say a time sale is going to shoot each other and say the answer. That's always a winner.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't heard of that one before. That's clever.
No.
Yeah.
But okay. I like the lollies idea, and that's bribery is always a good strategy.
Exactly.
In moderation.
That's right. I love it. Creative parenting, we call it. Now, if you kind of, I guess, skip over that thing, get a bit laxed on the times tables, are there some effects that may lead into high school and beyond?
There is, and I see that with kids, as I teach grade four, and I see already that kids that don't know their times tables, they're still using their fingers, or as we get into higher level multiplication and algebra, they can't just draw on it really quickly. It should be automatic, like riding a bike. It shouldn't be like, now that's right, I put my foot here and my hands here. They should just be able to do it and draw upon it, and what you do is you see that that fluency that they don't have means that they're starting to struggle in solving more complex problems, and that's not fair or helpful for these kids. Now, we know that some kids struggle with their processing and that, but I think we can target, we can find strategies to help those kids as well to get them up to speed. So again, it's about expectation and practice and reinforcement and a bit of bribery thrown in as well.
That's it, a bit of everything. And again, creative parenting really goes a long way. Hey, Craig, we need to take a quick break. We'll go to a song from Huey Lewis and the News and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this. 580s legends and into a little bit of 90s as well. Huey Lewis and the News. The power of love. It is absolutely, there's no limit on the power of true love, the love of God. But there's also no limit on a good education as well, where it can take you. So it's great to be talking to Craig Hunter from Rehoboth about these things. Now, Craig, we're talking about times tables and some of the traditional ways of learning. A thing called rote learning. Is this the best way for students to learn?
I think yes and no. I think that certainly things like times tables, I think the challenge is I've noticed that kids that just learn the times tables without context can get stuck. They can almost get to a point where they can do it really fast, but they can't stop and do deep thinking and apply those things.
Yes.
Definitely both. But let's be honest, rote learning is a way to learn things like times tables up to 12. There's a thing called fluency. I mentioned it briefly, but it's like learning all the notes in music.
Yes.
You know, you can learn all the notes in music, but you can't play.
Yeah,
you've got to learn how to play skillfully and appropriately and play in a band, play with others. And so if we think of rote learning in that way, that helps us with times tables. Not just learning the actual numbers and how they work, but how to apply them into life. And so some of the practical things that we can do as parents with our kids is just things like turnaround. You know, like, well, 4 times 6 is 24. Well, what's 6 times 4?
Yeah.
And I'm turning it into skip counting. Let's do skip counting in fives, 5, 10, 15, but then do it from 6. So it's 6, 11, 16, 21. And getting our kids to turn numbers around and then get them to play with numbers in a fun way.
Yeah, I like that.
And what
that
does is it gets them to creatively, like we talk about creative parenting, apply numbers in a way that, you know, I was just saying to Beck, a producer off air, and saying about, you know, we'll meet together in 2 weeks. That's two lots of 7 days. 7 times 2 is 14.
Yeah.
And kids love those little word games, number games that we can play with them to help them see that numbers actually apply. You know, they apply to real life. And one of my other favorite ones is the footy score. There's only one times table that actually works at footy. And Mike would like this one, but if my favourite one is 7 times 7. So 7 goals is 42 points. And then 7 points, 42 plus 7 is 49. So it's the only mathematical times table that actually works in footy. And so just little quirky things like that that help our kids play with numbers and manipulate them, because the reality is we've got a calculator, but we use so much number sense every day as adults.
Yes.
And our kids need to learn to do that as well. So just some ideas to help, not just rote learning, but life application as well.
Okay, a little one off topic actually, well, kind of on topic for me, the whole idea of calculating time, because obviously 60 seconds, 60 minutes, etc., it's not your traditional hundreds. How do you go with that? Because that's something that I, as a kid, learned, and it's actually really helped me, benefited me in so many ways in life, learning to calculate time, you know, off the cuff almost.
That's a very good point, and I think that's something we can do with our kids. Like, oh, we're meeting them at 10 o'clock, so how many hours is that? How many minutes? My kids, funny enough, off topic as well, is one of them had a birthday on a weekend, and one of them wrote a card, and they wrote down on the card, they're a bit of a math person, the person who wrote the card, and talked about how many minutes they were alive and how many seconds and how many hours, and they wrote that on their card. They worked out mathematically how many hours and minutes they'd been alive, so
Wow. They'd
worked that one out. And I think that the whole idea of time and space meeting tomorrow, how many hours is that? Even like the 24-hour time that we still use a lot.
Yes.
Getting our kids to understand that. So, yeah, exactly. And just gently having fun with that with our kids and getting them to think about stuff. And time is a good example of that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking about your person who is writing this card, calculating time alive, minutes and seconds, etc. It's not so much the math side that intrigues me. It's the thought process behind actually wanting to do that in the first place. That's very deep. How old? How old is this child?
They were 16 years old. So
wow.
They're both one of my sons, and they're really so neck and neck at maths at school, and they both enjoy a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
And so I think another interesting thing I'll throw at you is just learning how to break up numbers. One of the things that it's called partial products or the partial strategy, but let's say we're looking at a number like 3 times 15,
yep,
and we don't know our 15 times tables.
Yep.
It's thinking that, well, I can actually break that up into 3 times 10 plus 3
times
5.
Yeah,
and actually quite easy. Well, it's 15 plus 30, which is 45. And so one of the things we're trying to teach kids at school more and more is, not just, you know, when we were at school, perhaps it was more like, you know, put it in columns and just work it out, and this is how you do it.
Yeah.
But actually learning how to understand number and find different strategies to work things out in your head. Because obviously we do a lot of stuff that we're working out all the time, different things. And so, always finding ways to find patterns and finding ways to break up larger numbers and different numbers together, I think is also a really helpful thing to teach our kids as well.
I think that's a really good lesson for life as well, is when there's a big challenge in front, break it down into smaller components, bite-sized chunks that you can actually deal with a lot easier. So, yeah, fantastic advice there, Craig. We do need to take a break. We'll go to a song. Five, Adele, Someone Like You is great to have on the journey this afternoon, or this morning rather. It's Friday morning. Lockie hanging out with you, doing the weekdays thing. Mike is off today, and my pleasure to fill in for him. 22 minutes away from 11 o'clock, and we're talking education with Craig Hunter from Rehoboth. Now, Craig, we've been talking about maths and timetables and some of the ways of learning, the traditional, the more modern, and I guess the creative ways as well. If we've got, we're in a situation where I think we're actually having a bit of a fall in our math rankings. How do we fix that? How do we restore that, bring it back to, you know, some really good numbers? Pardon the pun.
That's a really good point. And I think that it's a perpetual debate. I think with the election coming up tomorrow, there's lots of opinions and ideas. But I think that, the reality is this, is that in 2000, we were up there in the top rankings in the world. As of a year or two ago, when the last rankings were released, we're 29th in the world in math.
Wow.
We're behind places like Estonia that spends a fraction of money per student than we do.
Yes.
And they're doing better than us. So we've got to look in the mirror and say, look, we're not doing things as well as we could. We're about 3 years behind places like Singapore and Shanghai by year 10. So I think that where this relates to times tables is this. We can't dumb down our curriculum, dumb down our expectations, go, oh, these kids, it's too hard, and we don't want to pressure them. I think we don't want to pressure them in a sense that it becomes an unhelpful kind of pressure that they're under kind of almost like a, you know, like a hot house of pressure and, yes. And getting put down. But the reality is that kids can learn a lot more, a lot faster than we give them credit for. And I really think we need to aim a bit higher, and we need to work together with schools and parents to say, no, let's actually regain something of the rigor and the challenge and the joy of learning maths, especially. So that's probably the key thing that I think we need to really fight for, alongside some other practical things. And I think one of the things that has come out of the last few years is because of teacher shortage, we're getting more and more teachers who are not maybe trained in maths, teaching maths. And so once they get to high school, a lot of our maths teachers are actually not trained in maths, or they need to be retrained in better methodology and better strategies that's going to help them teach appropriately. So there are some certainly practical tweaks, but I think there's got to be a sense that as a collective culture, we go, you know what, we value maths, and we're going to really work hard to teach times tables and teach number in a sense that this is...
We lost you there for a sec.
Oh, okay. So I think that's important. I think there's a great example of a guy called Eddie Wu. Have you heard of Eddie Wu at all?
I know the name, yes.
So he, a few years ago, started his own, basically started putting YouTubes up for his kids at the school that he was at. Mm. And all of a sudden, those YouTube videos of him explaining math concept went viral. And then he's ended up going full-time. And now he's got his own channel where he teaches, you know, from quite straightforward math concepts, quite high-level year 12 and even university level. And so certainly he's created an ability to explain, help kids understand. And I think often I'll put some of his videos up to links to the kids who struggle with understanding a concept. I'll say, let's watch a bit of Eddie Wu and see what he says. And that's something that he's on a mission is to say, look, let's just keep aiming high and doing that. And he's got this crazy thing on the TV, I don't know if you've seen it, where he gives kids like a certain amount of money and they've got to be the boss of their house and spend that money appropriately and budget for it and make money decisions. And it's a great example of maths at work. And he's almost like an ambassador for maths and quite passionate about it. But that's people great. Like Eddie Wu create a culture of learning and of excitement around maths rather than like you've got to do this and pass a test.
Drudgery. And dread. It's important.
Right.
It's important to keep it exciting and fresh as well. And I think, you know, you've hit on that point so many times of just making it about the actual process of the calculation or the learning rather than actually just giving people, you know, this is 1 + 1 = 2. Why is 1 + 1 = 2? Because then once they've got that process in the back end, they can actually use that in so many other ways in life, not just in maths as well. You know, is it a case of us getting back to basics a little bit more? Is that what we need to do, or do we need some more forward thinking in our strategies? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think it is. I think one of the mantras is back to basics, you know, the 3 R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. But we are changing in terms of the world. The world's changing so fast. So we do have to adapt. We do have to change how we teach. And I think that it's got to be fun. I think we use a lot of tactile stuff, a lot of games and activities.
Yes.
But always the goal is to aim high, you know, to make it fun, but also make it challenging. And let's not be afraid to challenge our kids. I think sometimes we're worried about challenging our kids because they won't be able to understand
like
it, and they'll fail and they'll feel bad about themselves. Yeah. But actually, that's the whole point. We want them to fail. We want them to be challenged. We want them to be extended. And that's part of the journey.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, let's make it easy so they don't fail and they don't feel bad about themselves. No, the opposite. Let's challenge them. Let's aim higher. And kids will rise to that. Even kids who struggle, if we give them the right help and atmosphere, I guess, and warmth, they'll also... I've seen kids that really struggle at school with the right intervention, the right help, the right support, really start to see incredible progress. Rather than going, oh, you're not good at maths, so we'll just put you over in that... you know, maths class for not very good maths kids, and you can just stay there for the next 5 years. No, let's find ways to help those kids also do better and improve. And that's also part of the journey, I think, for us of helping all kids succeed. And maths is not one of those things that's like you either got it or you haven't. That's one thing we've got to break. Like someone's good at maths or bad at maths. It's a matter of, as teachers and as parents, how do we help them improve? That's what we've got to think, rather than they're good or bad. It's just a matter of intentional practice and help and scaffolding, and every kid can improve.
Exactly. Well, Craig, we've got to wrap up there, but thank you so much for all your input. Always educational for me, as well as I'm sure plenty of the listeners too. And I'm sure you look forward to catching up with Mike in the next few weeks. In the meantime, have yourself a wonderful week and God bless, and we'll catch up with you very soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, Lockie.
For more details on this and other programs, contact 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia, or visit the website 98five.com.